You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Okay, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning into the Republic Broadcasting Network. Again, if you want to call in at any time, the toll-free number is 800-313-9443. So just prior to the break, Andy, I was just commenting on my observation that these people that become these great successes economically and otherwise in terms of their creativity often embrace the very philosophy, or at least the political parties that embrace the philosophy that would undermine their success. I just find that astounding that they do that. Is that your observation or what?
Yes, and I think in general people are often mixed. They're not flawlessly consistent, and I think that's true
sure.
of business people as well. And there are different reasons for that. So I don't know the case histories of the Bill Gateses, the Sam Waltons, the Martha Stewarts, et al. Well enough to speak about them individually, but there are several possibilities for why that's true. One, the innocent possibility is that they're not philosophers, they're not intellectuals, they're business people. Mm-hmm. They don't understand the principles involved, moral, political, and philosophical principles, and they don't see mm-hmm. that the more laissez-faire a society is, the more it benefits everybody else. They may well just simply have been steeped in the altruist socialist ethos that dominates our intellectual and political climate, and think that the social maybe not full they don't support full socialism. They don't want to be like Castro's Cuba, but
sure.
Various forms of government controls, regulations, environmental restrictions, social welfare programs, etc. They may see as beneficial to the poor guy, the little man, the common man, and so they're confused. They hold clashing, contradictory ideas. They're confused. That's the case with many people in the world.
Sure.
That's one possibility, but that's the innocent possibility. The not so innocent possibility is that the heads, the CEOs of entrenched companies recognize that under creeping socialism, they think that they will benefit enormously from that. For instance, this is one reason why historically many business people have not supported capitalism is that if you're a successful company, one of the things you could do to ward off entrepreneurial startup companies that are going to compete against you is by initiating governmental force against them. Remember,
sure.
remember, socialist programs are always, without exception, they're always supported on the grounds that they will promote the public good. Well,
right.
Look how an entrenched company, how many ways an entrenched company, in contrast to a startup company, can claim that we're the public. We
right.
won. We employ thousands of, maybe hundreds of thousands of workers. So if you put us
sure.
out of business, we lose jobs. We have millions of customers. So if you hurt us, you hurt our customers.
Right.
There's a hundred ways in which
right.
entrenched companies can claim to be the public.
Right. Well, let's finish that thought when we get back. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Yeah. Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by Drs. Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, "A penny saved is a penny earned." By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Okay, welcome back to the second hour of the Peter Mac Show. We're speaking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein about Atlas Shrugged in general and about the philosophy contained in it and its relevance to today. And Andy, I think we cut you off there from the as the commercial began to play in.
We were talking about how and why many business people do not support capitalism. We went through the innocent reason for that in many cases. And then in some cases, the not-so-innocent reason is, remember that this is like some of the villains in Atlas Shrugged, Jim Taggart, who's the president of Taggart Transcontinental, Orrin Boyle, who's the head of Associated Steel in Atlas Shrugged, is that socialist policies are always supported on the grounds that they protect the public good. And successful business people can claim that, you know, in many ways that, well, my company represents the public. One way, of course, is how many employees they have. So a company like General Motors or Ford or General Foods or any number of, you know, large corporations like that employ tens of thousands of people, in some cases hundreds of thousands of people. I think Walmart, I think, employs over a million. And so they could say very very plausibly to the government, if you hurt my company, you're going to hurt. I will have to lay off workers. Their families are going to suffer. You know, that's a bad thing. I mean, in that way, we represent the public. Two, how many customers do we have? We may have millions of customers, and so you know, our customers depend on us. If you hurt our company, you hurt our customers. Again, you hurt the public. And of course, a third way is that the entrenched companies have made money in the past, as opposed to startup companies, which may be struggling to make money now. So they mm-hmm. have money to contribute to campaign funds for the mm-hmm. politicians. The elected politicians are the ones, of course, who appoint the bureaucrats who regulate business. So again, you know, they have an edge on claiming that they're the public in opposition to the startup companies who can't do this. So very often, that's the not so innocent reason that business people don't support capitalism or support all kinds of socialist policies is because they know that the regulatory agencies that will be set up will naturally protect the entrenched companies against their most feared competitors. That is the new guy, the hungry young guy with an idea who doesn't have much capital, but he's got an idea and he's got a startup company and he's going to cut into their market share. That's mm-hmm. that's often the insidious reason why business
right.
people don't support capitalism.
Right. Right. Well, here's an uplifting quote from a fellow named Tom Borelli, who is the co-manager of something called the Free Enterprise Action Fund. I don't know if you're aware of this, but he spoke to the 15,000 employees, vendors, and shareholders at Walmart's annual stockholder meeting on June 1st. And this is what he said, Andy. He said, quote, "We're here to support the fundamental principles of capitalism. You're fighting two wars, one against your retail competitors and one against your ideological opponents. They want to transform Walmart into General Motors and Ford, and we can't allow that. We want you to advance their social, they want you to advance their social agenda. Management has two choices. One, try to appease the people who don't like you and never will. Or two, use your vast resources and influence to educate your consumers, employees, and your suppliers on the principles and benefits of free market capitalism. Promote the virtues of capitalism. Use your marketing muscle to sell Ayn Rand's timeless novel, Atlas Shrugged, into millions of homes," unquote. Isn't that amazing?
That's great. That's outstanding. If any big-time company would stand up and support the principles of capitalism and the principles dramatized in Atlas Shrugged, Walmart may well be the one that would do it. Certainly, they still had, and I think Federal Express also was like that, you know, founded on entrepreneurial principles mm-hmm. of individualism and sustained it to a significant degree as they became hugely mm-hmm. successful. But yeah, that's great, and it's also in some ways it's not surprising to me because 50 years after Atlas Shrugged's publication, the book has sold millions of copies, mm-hmm. continues to sell well over 100,000 copies a year. It's beloved by many people, becoming increasingly so that your major shareholders or executives at Walmart understand that and support. It's not a surprise to me. I think we're going to see much more of this in the future. And this is one of the things I was saying before when I mentioned briefly how I see, you know, objectivism and Ayn Rand's books and ideas are the hope for freedom in this country and in the world. And I see very bright instances of this in our society with the growth of Ayn Rand's interest in Ayn Rand's ideas, and that's just one example of it.
Right. It's interesting to me, too, that not only you have companies, and you explain the innocent reasons and the not-so-innocent reasons, or at least speculated on those, about companies and their embrace of capitalism and wavering support of it during their periods of growth and so forth, but it's also interesting to me, Andy, of people that were you know, like in her inner circle to begin with, Ayn Rand's inner circle, I'm thinking of like Alan Greenspan and, you know, what he said in her book, Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal, back in the early 60s, I think it was. I don't have it in front of me right now. But basically, he said that the gold standard is the protector of private property. And without a gold standard, you know, backing up the money, you don't have any protection of private property. And yet he veered way away from that when he was the chairman of the Federal Reserve for the many years. And it's interesting how people just can adopt one philosophical position and then just adopt almost 180 degree opposing position during their lifetimes. And I guess, you know, it's sort of a rhetorical question, but I wonder what in the world happened to Alan Greenspan?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that regarding Greenspan in particular. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really follow the details of his career, and I don't mm-hmm. know him personally. But I could speculate on that more generally on that issue, and that might include him. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's possible that given the enormous difficulties of trying to implement laissez-faire principles in the government of the late 20th and early 21st century, it's possible that somebody could simply become pragmatic, and that is, well, mm-hmm. You know, I can't take a principled stand here because I'll simply be voted out or not rehired, or you know, I'll simply be marginalized or even you know booted out of office in some way. And so mm-hmm. I just have to settle for any little. We can't have the whole banquet, but it might be able to institute some little morsel right now, and thereby for a few. I think you know Ronald Reagan's example is too. For a few minor gains, you basically give up your principles and any hope
right.
of explaining your principles to a wide audience. I mean, if you're the president of the United States, or you're the head of the Federal Reserve System, or you're the CEO of Microsoft, or you know you have some very very prominent position like that, people will listen to you. And if you present in a reasoned way, why you stand for in a principled manner for individual rights and laissez-faire capitalism, you will reach a lot of people. And but it requires real courage to stand up against the intellectual and moral and political establishment. And so far, no politician or you know bureaucrat. Or a business person of that kind of stature has been willing to do it. Greenspan, you would think, would have had the intellectual grounding to do it, since he was a brilliant business economist and a personal friend of Ayn Rand, who understood objectivism very well. But evidently, he did not. So
yeah.
that was an opportunity missed.
And absolutely.
Yeah, it's sad, but. Discuss, if you would, Andy, the character, and I'm not as familiar with him because I haven't read far enough, but Francisco de Anconia and his role in Atlas Shrugged and what he was motivated to do and how he irritated so many people, if I understand it right, at the beginning, because he seemed to be capitulating and not defending capitalism and so forth.
You know, I think, like Hank Reed and Francisco de Anconia is one of the two characters in the story that people find the most attractive, the most appealing, and the most moving. He's the head of the world's largest copper, an Argentine copper company, one of the wealthiest men in the world, as the head of the largest copper producing company in the world. But he is one of the early strikers. And so I'm trying to put this in a way that won't give away the whole.
Okay, I didn't.
Of the story.
Okay.
The whole mystery of the story. But he's one of the early strikers. He's one of the first of the great productive geniuses to understand the necessity of the strike to bring the statist regime to its knees and to show in deeds, not just in words, to show the American people and people around the world what the necessary consequences of socialism are, and what are the losses, how much we lose when capitalism is destroyed. They have to show that by basically removing all elements of the capitalist system from the world, and show by its absence, by its dearth, just how much is lost with capitalism when it goes. So Francisco is one of the early strikers in the story, and practically, he has to liquidate D'Anconia Copper, which is such a vast concern. He's got to do it over a period of years. It can't be. It's impossible to do it at once. And so he pretends to be a dissolute playboy who basically is slowly squandering away this vast fortune. So I mean, Francisco plays two roles in the story. One, he has to liquidate the productive assets of a vast copper producing company, and two, he is one of the leading recruiting agents for the strike, and it's Francisco who recruits Hank Reardon to the strike over a long period of time, and he's the one who convinces Reardon and the bad guys help by exploiting Reardon, but Francisco's the one who explains the meaning of the exploitation and why Reardon needs to go on strike.
Okay, very good. We'll be back here in just a couple minutes. Staying with us, call in if you want to, 800-313-9443.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by Drs. Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? Evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Okay, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. We're discussing Atlas Shrugged and her ideas with Dr. Andrew Bernstein. And Andy, one of the things that I constantly wonder about, obviously you promote the ideas of Ayn Rand, I promote the ideas of freedom and individualism on this show as well, but one question I have, a sort of overarching question is, do we constantly try to resist the collectivists in our society philosophically and so forth, as you and I have done, or do we take the tact, as some of the characters in Ayn Rand's novel did, and just step out of the way and let the system crash, hoping that it'll crash sooner than later, and then we can pick up the pieces and get started again? And for example, here's a concrete question within that larger philosophical question, and we all know that Hillary Clinton is probably the front runner for the Democrats, is likely to get the nomination from that party, and therefore has a reasonable shot at the presidency of the United States. And if she does become, God forbid, the president of the United States, I think she will. I think there's every indication that she'll, try to implement socialized medicine as she did when she was Clinton's wife. You know, a totally non-elected official. Now the question, I guess, is if that happens, should we let that proceed? Get a socialistic system, watch it crash like we've seen, you know, occurred in Canada and in the European nations? Or do we continue to resist that and thereby slow the demise of our movement in that particular direction towards socialized medicine, and therefore prolong, in a sense, the agony. What is your sense of this?
Well, I think we need to remember, before answer that question, we need to remember that if the U.S. government collapses from the weight of its own irrationality and the self-destructiveness of these socialist programs, then that's going to mean enormous hardship and early death, or earlier death, for many people. I mean, in the absence of civil authority, it means you'll have riots, you'll have widespread looting and crime. You're gonna revert back to to anarchic, chaotic, very violent conditions. This is going to be a period of tremendous hardship. So I would say, as long as there's any possible chance of defeating the statists now, and of implementing the ideas that support capitalism, I think that we have a chance of winning, establishing a system of individual rights and freedom. I think the hallmark is, as long as there's no censorship imposed in the country, and we don't have censorship now, and I think we're years away from it, maybe even decades away from that. It means there's still hope to spread the ideas, to stand up and support freedom and individual rights. And there's a chance to win the intellectual and moral and educational battle, and consequently to completely revolutionize the political system without having to go through the hellish conditions of collapse. I mean, we've seen governments collapse in the last 30 years in Lebanon, in Somalia, in several other cases, and it's necessarily followed by the rule of brute force, by utter chaos and the rule of brute force. So I think if there's any chance to avoid that, I think, and there certainly is, then we have to take it.
Okay. Well, but I wasn't necessarily talking about the entire collapse of the federal government in the United States, although that's possible. But a smaller example is like the medical industry. If Hillary Clinton gets, first of all, do you agree with me that if she gets in power, she is going to try to implement something that will be socialized medicine or something very close to that?
Absolutely. And I think the left is already pushing in that direction. You notice that Michael Moore has a new film.
Sure.
Out.
Right.
Is it Sicko? Is that the name of it?
I'm not sure.
Right.
That's the name of his movie, right?
Yeah, but in it, he excoriates the private insurance companies. For Michael Moore, predictably, are the villain here, not the government.
Right.
And of course, part of his solution is to, from what I've read, is to make illegal any form of private health insurance.
Sure.
He wants to ban that. So you can see the left gearing up in support of Hillary Clinton for socialized medicine. So I think you're absolutely right, and I think socialized medicine will be the same, necessarily will be the same disaster here that it has been everywhere else. In fact, it'd be worse, because as long as there's some private health care, such as in the United States, that means people in these socialized countries, in Canada, in Europe, etc., that means they can still benefit. One, the
right.
pharmaceuticals that their socialist doctors can dispense don't come from socialized countries. They come from the American pharmaceutical companies and from the so that if you fully socialize medicine, God knows, the harm that will do to the pharmaceutical companies, how much you'll hurt them, and how much of the R&D, the research and development they do will be hurt. And two, the American semi-free, semi-private healthcare system still enables us to train specialists. So we benefit from the cardiologists and the neurologists, et cetera. But so do foreigners who can come here. The Canadians, for instance, have charity organizations to raise money for Canadians who need heart care, who can't get in to see a Canadian cardiologist,
right,
to come to America.
If we collapse, then there'll
be
no place for them to escape to. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, folks,
right.
We'll be back for the last half hour. Hang with us.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Okay, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. We're down to the last half hour. Again, if you want to call in, the toll-free number is 800-313-9443. And I've just been advised it would be a good idea for me to spell your name, Dr. Andrew Bernstein. So it's Andrew, of course, A-N-D-R-E-W, and Bernstein is B-E-R-N-S-T-E-I-N, Dr. Andrew Bernstein. And the book we've been discussing in relation to various current events and so forth is Atlas Shrugged, A-T-L-A-S, and then the word shrugged, S-H-R-U-G-G-E-D, Atlas Shrugged, the author of which, of course, is Ayn Rand, and that is spelled A-Y-N-R-A-N-D. Well, just prior to the break, go ahead.
If I might, listeners can go to the website of the Ayn Rand Institute, which
sure.
is just AYNRAND.org, AynRand.org, and they could get tons of information on Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead and Ayn Rand's other books and on her philosophy of objectivism and on all the programs ARI, the Ayn Rand Institute, has to institute Ayn Rand's ideas in the high schools and in the universities. Some of which I think are the brightest spots in our society today in the fight for individual mm-hmm. rights and freedom.
Okay, very good. We were discussing healthcare and its possible demise if somebody like Hillary gets in power. And I have in front of me, Andy, I'm sure you've seen it, a little pamphlet. It's just a few pages by Leonard Peikoff called Healthcare is Not a Right. And he, at the end of it, says, and I think this is a parallel to what you were talking about with the businessmen, who, the fact that businessmen often don't support capitalism, particularly, as you pointed out, probably when they get into a certain position of economic power, if you will. And he says in here at the end of his little discussion of the fact that healthcare is not a right, that it's really the doctors that are going to have to stand up. Of course, you know, people like you and me can help, but it's the doctors that are going to have to stand up. And he says, as Peikoff says, quote, "The battle against managed care and every other socialist plan, in my opinion, depends on the doctor speaking out against the plan, but not only on practical grounds, rather, first of all, on moral grounds. The doctors must defend themselves and their own interests as a matter of solemn justice, upholding a moral principle, the first moral principle, self-preservation. The American medical profession has given this country superlative care for generations. It is time for the country to say thank you, which it will do only if the doctors stand up and assert their own rights, their real selfish American rights. If they can do that, all of us will have a chance. I hope it's not already too late. Thank you." Of course, he wrote that in 1993.
He's absolutely right. And you're right that there's this 100% parallel with what we've been discussing about business people. The same point can be made about the businessmen. They've solved the problem of material production. We're all enormously wealthy because of their productive activities. We need to say thank you to them as well as to the doctors. But given the altruist socialist premises that dominate our intellectual, moral, and political culture, that's not going to happen unless the businessmen and the doctors stand up proudly in defense of their own right to their own life and their right to the pursuit of their happiness, their right to the profit that they earn, and that they're not slaves to society or to anybody, that they're free agents with the inalienable right to their own life. That's what's necessary. I think Dr. Peikoff's absolutely right. If we're going to save private health care in a free country, then the doctors need to stand up in defense of their own rights.
Right, and I think it's imperative. A corollary of that is to point out what Hillary's plan or Michael Moore would promote, and they would make it illegal for a doctor to provide his or her service to a willing paying patient privately. Now think about that, ladies and gentlemen. These people, Hillary, would use violent force to prevent your doctor and you from engaging in a mutually agreed transaction whereby he or she provides you a service, medical service, and you pay them an agreed upon price. They would use violent force to prevent that from happening. And that is at the root of what Hillary Clinton and Michael Moore and the other ideologues of that color are promoting. Isn't it, Andy?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what socialized medicine is. It means there's basically one medical provider in a society, the government. And there are no private doctors. There's no competition among doctors for patients. Basically, you're at the mercy of what the government provides. And so the government initiates force here. You're absolutely right. It prevents the doctors from operating freely in private practice. It prevents the customer from going to private doctors. The government basically monopolizes by force the entire field, the entire medical field. So it's an egregious violation of the rights of both the physicians and the patients. And of course, it has horrific practical consequences, which we can discuss if you think your listeners need to hear that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of many things we could discuss. We were down to a little over 20 minutes if you want to go that route or anybody calls in and they want to discuss that. But to me, I think it's important to point out that these socialistic programs, whether they be in medicine or some other area, are always backed up. It's always way in behind the scenes, if you will, Andy, and people don't seem to see it, but they're talking about using violence to prevent two or more people from freely engaging in some mutually agreed upon transaction or service, whether it be in medicine or business or some other place. And that's at the root of socialism. It's the application of violence to prevent people from exercising, you know, what you and I see as their is their right simply to live and, right. and to do what's necessary to survive. And I think that people don't understand that that's what government is. It's the application of violence. Now, if it's done to protect individual rights, that's okay. But it's when it's done to initiate violence against somebody, then that's not okay.
Yes. Socialism, of course, is based on the idea that individuals owe involuntary service to the state, and then the government's role by God is to make sure that that gets enforced. And so it necessarily is a system that institutionalizes and legalizes the governmental initiation of force against innocent, honest, and often highly productive individuals on a massive widespread scale. And this is why main reason why you get the brain drain out of the socialist countries and towards the freer ones. The most educated people, and certainly the engineers, the scientists, the doctors, the medical researchers, et al., they tend to flee from socialist countries to the freer ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so we benefit as having still being the freest country on earth. We've benefited enormously from the brain drain. And any number of fields, leading researchers in their fields come here because they're not forced into bed with the government nearly as much as in the more socialist countries.
Right. And the point I think you were making with regard to what happens if we adopt socialized medicine like Canada and the European nations have is that there won't be a place for people to flee to get medical care now when they can't get it, when they're guaranteed the operation in Canada, but they have to wait in line for 6 months or a year to get the operation and meanwhile may die or suffer other dire consequences from waiting for that long for medical support. They can come to the United States and pay to get that medical service. And if we go away, there's nowhere else in the world to go get it.
That's right. I mean, the very predictable economic consequence of free on demand. I mean, like Milton Friedman once said, the closer a price approaches infinity, the more demand approaches infinite. The closer price approaches zero, the closer demand approaches infinite. When you provide something free on demand, what that does is it greatly increases the demand, and we've seen in every socialist country, then the budget gets busted by this, and in order to save money, the government trains GPs, general practitioners. Now, from what I understand, in England and places like that, the general practitioners are pretty good, but they don't have the money to train specialists. So, God forbid, you need to see a cardiologist, or you need to see a neurologist. The waiting lists are endless, and people die, from treatable heart disease because they have to wait a year to get in to see a cardiologist. At least the people who can afford money, or in Canada, they have charity organizations to raise money for people to come to the United States to see cardiologists or see specialists. Like you said, if we socialize medicine here, then it's going to be more of a disaster for the exact reasons you said. There won't be any place left. And they don't do any research and development there. That goes on in the American pharmaceutical companies. The very medications they use come from the American pharmaceutical companies. If we socialize them, then those companies will be put out of business probably, and there goes research and development. So you won't have any new medications, you won't have any more advances against disease. It'll be an even worse disaster than when England and Canada and other European nations became England and other European nations and Canada became socialized medicine.
Right, and to draw the parallel back to Atlas Shrugged, Andy, although I don't see it as a concerted conscious effort to strike, and I'll leave that term vague just as you did so people can read the novel, I think we see the beginnings of that to some degree in the field of medicine. For example, a lot of doctors who were, OBGYN specialists, gynecologists, have left the profession because the insurance rates have gotten so astronomical, again, without going into all the details, because of the government intervention. And doctors in that field have simply said, it's too expensive to practice medicine, so I'm going to get out of practicing medicine altogether in that area, or practice in some other way. And I know a friend of mine is an anesthesiologist, and he's told me that some doctors have simply given up on dealing with insurance. They say, no, I'm only going to see patients that are going to pay me directly because the the bureaucracy, the paperwork, again, through the legislative actions of government that have created this monster, have decided it's too much to deal with. They have to employ too many people. There's too much paper flowing in and out of the office, too much to keep track of with all the insurance, and they just are wanting to return, or, you know, to those of you that can, to a place where a patient walks in and pays. You know, and I think to draw a parallel here, Andy, and comment on it if you would, as soon as I get done with it, if we did car insurance like we did health care insurance, if the government legislated that, then you would have, you would, every time you got a dent or a scratch on your car, you would pay a $10 copay, and you'd go in and there'd be $100 or $200 or $500 worth of work done on your car, and you'd simply pay your $10 copay. But then, of course, the rates for car insurance would go up and up and up, and it would be catastrophically expensive,
and the waiting list to get in to see a service station to have an oil change would be six months or a year,
right?
Because the demand for that would be so enormous,
right?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The scariest part of all of this is because the government is restricting doctors' incomes by means of these policies, and two, forcing the doctor. The most important point is now, medicine is not just practice between the doctor and the patient. The government has forced in a third-party payer, whether it's the government itself through Medicare or Medicaid or the insurance companies. The doctors are, we see the brain drain out of the medical field. The leading minds are not going into the field of medicine as much as they did in the past because they don't want to have the government looking, or the government's proxy, the insurance companies, looking over their shoulders whenever they have to prescribe a procedure for for a patient. Is it too expensive?
Right.
Will Medicare pay for it? Will the health insurance company pay for it? They just don't want their mind and their business under the control of the government. And you're seeing doctors leave the field, and you're seeing fewer people enter the field. That's very scary because we're not going to get nearly as many of the top minds into the field of medicine as we did when we were politically freer in the past, or when medicine was much more privately controlled than governmentally controlled as it is today.
Right.
That's very scary.
Right. And the scariness is also in that, in a very subtle way, which we can't necessarily measure unless we can get inside the, you know, a doctor's head through some kind of survey or something, is when you're in there seeing a doctor for something, as I did, 10 years ago with this tumor in my ear, very rare kind of tumor, you want the judgment of that doctor to be uninhibited by concerns for what insurance will pay or what the government's thoughts will be on things. You want that doctor to be completely free to make his best medical, scientifically based judgment on what should be done for your particular case. And in today's medical climate, I'm not sure you can be assured of that, Andy, because you don't know what pressures that doctor's under when he or she is about to give you advice on how you should proceed with your particular malady or medical condition.
No, that's absolutely right. He has to be concerned, especially if it's a Medicare or Medicaid patient.
Sure.
He has to be concerned how much can be paid for this. He may prescribe a lesser procedure than the one that he thinks is best because the government won't pay for the one that he thinks is best. So your health then doesn't depend on the doctor-patient relationship or on your ability to pay for the doctor service or to raise the money for the doctor service. It depends on what the government will give the doctor for this procedure. So, you basically, it's not just you and the doctor in the examining room or the operating room anymore. It's you, the doctor, and the government. And that is a very scary scenario to have to live under.
Absolutely. Right. Well, we're down to just about 10 minutes here. Andy, maybe it's too early to begin summarizing your thoughts. We don't want to get away with the story of Ayn Rand, of course. It's a brilliant novel, several hundred pages long. I just happen to be one who have acquired the ideas, if you will, of Ayn Rand more through her nonfiction than through her fiction. I enjoyed books like, I'll go ahead and tell folks what those are, like Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal, and The Virtue of Selfishness. Those two are the ones that readily come to mind for me. Others like to get ideas through novels, and there's, I think, value in both forms of presenting ideas. And as I said, I've begun to read Ayn Rand. I've only about 80 pages into it now. But I would encourage people to take a look at that. Again, go to the Ayn Rand website there. Andy, I guess here, has written a number of articles. He's also written a book, The Capitalist Manifesto. I think that's your most recent work, isn't it, Andy?
Yeah, it came out in 2005. I'm almost done now with Objectivism and One Lesson, which is
okay.
Designed to be the definitive introductory text to Ayn Rand's philosophy. Mm-hmm. Leonard Peikoff has written an advanced text, Objectivism, the Philosophy of Ayn Rand, but this is a book for the intelligent layman, and Objectivism in One Lesson, my book, will be a book for the intelligent layman. I'm almost done with that, so I'll have that finished in the next few months. I've been working on that for several years now. But if they go to the website of the Ayn Rand Institute, it's just aynrand.org, aynrand.org, they can find out an enormous amount of information on Ayn Rand's novels, like The Fountain Head and Atlas Shrugged, on her philosophy of objectivism and how it applies to all these topical issues, including the defense of private medicine, free market medicine, and the criticisms of socialized medicine. They can get tons of information on topical issues like that from ARI's website, aynrand.org.
Right. You know what I would like to see, Andy, is more debates. I mean, the ideas of Ayn Rand and stuff are, well, we'll have a few minutes after we come back from the break, folks. So I'll hold that thought, and we'll be back here with Andy Bernstein in just a minute. Thank you.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by doctors Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? Evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
It is through the use of ritual that evil gets power. What do you think those people do at Bohemian Grove? It is ritual. They gather and perform ritual with evil intent. The more vile the ritual, the greater the evil that comes from it. This is done to spread their evil influence and control over our lives. Legend has it that the Knights Templar found the Holy Grail, and it was this that made them so powerful. Can we really believe they found the Holy Grail in their dig at the Temple of Solomon? What they most likely found was the occult knowledge of the greatest magician of all, Solomon. This is what turned the Templars from monks into masons. We, ordinary people, can use these same principles and empower ourselves to obtain protection and favors. The Bible is loaded with examples of how ritual was used by prophet and angel. Ritual prayer is an effective way of getting results. We can use it to bring positive results to one's family, community, and even nation. For more information and ordering on the book, The Power of Ritual Prayer, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner. Call 215-500-2972.
Okay, welcome back, folks, to the Peter Mac Show. We just have a few minutes left with my special guest, Dr. Andrew Bernstein, in our discussion of Atlas Shrugged, the novel by Ayn Rand. It's 50 years old this year. What I was about to say, Andy, is I personally would like to see more live debates or videotape debates, if a person can't attend them, between folks, you know, in of the Ayn Rand Institute and others on, you know, the left and so forth. I recall one time, I don't want to put you on the spot, there was one fellow that you really wanted to debate, and I'm not sure if you ever got a chance to debate him or, you know, if there's ever been a venue whereby you could do that. Do you recall whom I'm talking about?
Well, I mean, when the Capitalist Manifesto came out, the guy I really wanted to debate was Noam Chomsky.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the
I thought it was somebody. Okay, go ahead. Yeah,
the MIT professor. I mean, there's any number of leftists, but I had to settle for some professor out at USC. I debated a few years ago on capitalism versus socialism, and as you would expect, it was a very one-sided debate, since there's basically no arguments you could give in support of socialism today, not against somebody who knows objectivism, certainly. But yeah, I agree with you. I think those debates are helpful, or, you know, panel discussions or just dialogue, you know, between supporters of capitalism and supporters of socialism. I think the economic argument in support of capitalism is certainly overwhelming, has been for years now. And I think for somebody who knows Ayn Rand's philosophy and knows her moral code and understands that egoism is an enormously beneficial, positive, and virtuous force in human life, the arguments for capitalism are unanswerable. The real arguments are on moral grounds, and to support capitalism, you need to support egoism, the right of the individual to his own life. And that's what's wrong with traditional arguments in support of capitalism. They try and support it on grounds that, well, you know, it helps everybody, which is true. But the key point is an individual has the inalienable right to his own life, that he has to pursue the values his life depends upon, and he has the moral right to do so, and he must have the legally protected right to do so. That's the key point. That's what Ayn Rand provides, that's been missing for so many years.
Right.
And Atlas Shrugged is the great vehicle for dramatizing that and expressing and showing, not just telling it, but showing it in action, the great virtues of egoism and the evil of any attack on an individual's right to his own life.
And let me just read what she wrote, a preamble to Atlas Shrugged in my copy, and she says, quote, "To all the readers who discovered the Fountainhead and asked me many questions about the wider application of its ideas, I want to say that I'm answering these questions in the present novel, and that The Fountainhead was only an overture to Atlas Shrugged. I trust that no one will tell me that men such as I write about don't exist. That this book has been written and published is my proof that they do." That's Ayn Rand's foreword to Atlas Shrugged. Well, I hope we can find more examples of men like that in real life that do exist, Andy, because I think your lifestyle and my lifestyle and the years that we have left here on this planet depend on that. And I look around at the students at my college and see the various ideas that are promoted there, and the very lack of clarity of those ideas. I think if we can bring clarity to those ideas, I think people will have no trouble seeing the winning arguments of objectivism and free market enterprise and capitalism and so on. But I think that they're unfortunately blurry, and students haven't been taught to analyze those. Well, we're down to the very end, Andy. Thank you very much for taking 2 hours out of your Sunday afternoon to be with us today, and we'll have to have you come back.
It was great being here, Peter, anytime.
Thank you. See you next week, folks, and I'll have Edwin Vieira on. Take care.
A message.